This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I know we took a week there in the middle of the regular season to take a little bit of a break, a combination on my part of some just laziness and just prior engagements and things of that nature. But, you know, if we missed anything during that week, we'll be able to catch everything up with you as we go along for this new episode of the NBA Team Podcast. We're glad to have you all back. My name is Andrew Reich. I'm one of the co-hosts, and here's my other co-host, Adam Murray. How you doing?
Welcome back.
I know. Where did I go, huh?
It's been a very, very long winter here. We haven't been doing these.
Yeah, you could have just recorded one on your own and just thrown it out there for the masses. But I think everybody wanted me. You know, I got the cube rating.
Of course. I'm the one who just brings you down.
Yeah. So. It would have. I mean, if you had done it, we may have gotten 200 listens. But with me, you get a solid 400 listens. But welcome back. We got a little things to talk about with the regular season. The one good thing is the fact that, you know, with all on top of all the, you know, the winter storm. What is it called? Jonas? Is that Jonas, like Jonas Gray, the running back, and the Jonas brothers and those people?
I thought you'd go with Jonas Jerebko.
Oh, man, Jonas Jerebko is like so far out of my mind.
An actual basketball reference. No, you could go with the Jonas brothers.
Jonas, cool. We could talk about Jonas Valanciunas.
We there's two basketball references, and you chose the Jonas brothers. That's just where you stand. It's cool.
Well, you're in Boston, so you see Jerebko. I mean, has he even been playing, or is he in the rotation right now?
He's at the very end of the rotation, and that's the problem with, you know, deep teams like the Celtics, where it's just there's too many people, and you don't have any...
Are you at the point where you can officially call the Celtics deep?
They're deep as in there's nobody who can get on the court and stay on the court other than Isaiah Thomas. He's the only one that should be there. Other than that, well, let's see how they're doing. Oh, he's hot, so let's put him in for 20 minutes today. Then tomorrow he gets to 8 minutes.
Yeah,
so
once we get to the next episode, I think we'll have a little bit to talk about with the All-Star games because they're going to announce their reserves in the coming week. They announced the starters, but we always know the starters are voted – they come in from the votes. And if we just to do the recap, I believe the Eastern Conference it was LeBron James, Dwayne Wade – Kyle Lowry with the Toronto Raptors, which for some was a little bit of a surprise, like a pleasant surprise. Carmelo Anthony, did you have a problem with Carmelo there?
No.
I mean, he's still a 20-point-per-game scorer, you know, and he's probably...
He's also popular.
Well, he is one of the best scoring forwards in the league still. So I didn't have a terrible problem with that. The other one is Paul George, who's just been lights out this season. Even Wade I didn't have too much of a problem with.
No, because you mentioned it. It's just a popularity vote. Therefore, the starters all popularity. Who cares? At least they're good. It's not like let's vote Yao Ming in and he's out for the season with a torn ACL leg, whatever.
Yeah, but popularity is also sort of like the piggybacking of like when of the consensus of like when you realize yeah this guy's really good. Like Kawhi Leonard, like a year or two ago. He probably wouldn't have garnered half the votes that he got this year. But people know he's one of the best players in the NBA now. That's how quick it becomes. I mean, now, Kobe Bryant got the most in the Western Conference because, obviously, he's on the way out, and it's his last year, and everybody wanted him in. But the leading vote getter before that was Steph Curry. You know, I mean, it's pretty quick with a lot of these all-star votes of, like, how the guy that's considered the best becomes the most popular player.
Yeah, and the West Coast voters were, it was Kawhi, Curry,
Bryant.
Westbrook and Durant.
No Chris Paul, no James Harden. Any problems with that?
No problems with that. And then you have people like Draymond Green who are like, well, why aren't I a starter? Like, who are you going to who are you going to out, you know, supplant? Who are you going to be? Are you better than Kawhi Leonard?
And Draymond, and Draymond's popular. He is a popular guy, you know, and he's a human quote machine. So like he's just everybody loves when he just spits out these really funny like little sound bites for everybody, for all the writers to kind of hang on. You know, he's sort of like the voice of the Warriors. He's almost like the Xavier Woods of the Warriors. Xavier Woods from the New Day. He's like, he's the guy that doesn't wrestle the most, but he's like the mouthpiece, you know. But I don't want to, you know, totally like discourage anybody who watches Draymond Green and say, well, he's just the mouthpiece, but Draymond Green's been having an incredible year. He's got like 8 triple doubles, 6 triple doubles.
We're not taking anything away from his talent, but you're the third best player on your team, the third most important, if you, you know, you want to believe Klay Thompson is, you know, the greatest shooting guard in the league. And at what point, you're not going to be better than Steph Curry. You're not going to be more popular than Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. Again, who are you going to beat out? You're going to beat out Kobe on his final time? You're going to beat out Kawhi? Just, you know what? You have your max deal. You're going to make it as the reserves. Why do you care so much?
Let's talk, since it's obviously going to be happening as we're going into our, you know, once we do our next episode, it's already going to be decided. We're not going to talk about all the names and break them all down. Just give me a few names that if they don't make the All-Star reserve, you would be a little bit tiffed. Now, I know you've got the Boston connection. A lot of people like Isaiah Thomas. He's had a very good year. He's the leading scorer on the team. He's been their most dependable scorer, and they do have a winning record in the East. If Isaiah Thomas doesn't get it, would you be upset?
It would be sort of shocking.
Then you would be upset.
You can't really be upset about anything, because by the time, you know, they're announced now, and then when they play 4 weeks from now, you know, there's going to be an injury. There's going to be somebody who's going to sit it out. There's going to be somebody who needs rest. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's usually, what, 1 to 2 more people who come in by the end, but he should be in.
What about Love and Irving? Irving just came back, but people know that he's one of the best point guards in the league. And then Kevin Love, you know, we'll talk about the Cavs in a second, but what do you think there?
No, Kyrie Irving, he spent half the season out injured, and John Wall has been there all season, just as dominant. Mm-hmm. He's the only thing that really Washington has going for it right now. So that, you know, it should be Wall and Thomas. And Irving, again, I said this last year, you can't reward people for playing half the season. Yeah. I know it's not their fault they, you know, were out for
the
first.
Especially if the coaches are choosing.
Yeah, and the coaches usually make the good choice.
Yeah,
but
we got a really juicy storyline about that one too that we'll get to in a second, which is also related in ways to Irving and Love. Jimmy Butler, Andre Drummond, John Wall, DeMar DeRozan. If they don't make it in, I'm throwing furniture. That's all I'm gonna say in the Eastern side of things. Any issue with those four?
No, I don't have really an issue. But then again, you know, it's the NBA All-Star. The game is a joke. Everybody just shoots threes and dunks. You have, you know, back in the old days, you had Shaq being a point guard, and everybody's just, you know, nobody takes it seriously.
Well, the talk of the town last year, this time with the All-Star reserves, was that the Atlanta Hawks got 4 of them in. Would you have a problem if none of them make it?
No, because they're not good this year.
Well, Paul Millsap's played well.
Paul Millsap has played well, but has he been better than a lot of the forwards in the East? Would he probably make it? Yeah, I could probably, you know, in retrospect, yeah, he'll probably make it. But, you know, for the most part, have we heard anything from Kyle Korver this year? No, he's dead. he has just, you know, every year. Well, he's at the wrong side of 30.
He lost the quintessential white boy top 3-point shooter percentage guy to J.J. Redick this year. Redick's been the one who kind of took the mantle away this year. Maybe Korver will get it back. You never know.
No, again, he's 35 now, 36 maybe, and yeah, he never was able to play defense, and he's just been a liability. You have, you know, Damari Carroll long gone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ken Bazemore has not replaced him. Really, Jeff Teague, kind of take a step back. Hasn't really been as dominant as he was last year. Dennis Schroeder cutting into his minutes. Mm-hmm. Where's this dominant team that was, you know, they're just sitting there in the muck of the, I don't want to say it's the mediocrity of the East, but, you know, the above average sort of just bubbling there. They're not really doing anything to stand out.
My dark horse with the All-Star reserves, even though if he doesn't make it, it wouldn't surprise me. Kemba Walker, I think, has done just enough to get attention from the coaches to say, well, if a guy gets injured, like Andre Drummond just doesn't want to play in it or whatnot, which is unlikely for Drummond because it's his first one, but that's just one example, then I could see Kemba kind of sneaking in there. The West is a little more loaded like it is usually in the case of the West. Draymond Green, DeMarcus Cousins, Klay Thompson, James Harden, Chris Paul, Anthony Davis are shoe-ins, and that only leaves you a couple more. So guys like Damian Lillard, Gordon Hayward, Dwight Howard, maybe even C.J. McCollum. Like there's Danilo Gallinari even. There's a couple of them in there that might sneak in there at the very, very end.
Yeah, there's a couple, but these, again, are the end of the rosters, and they're the ones who will be, you know, the old...
I think there'll be one, like maybe a Gordon Hayward, or maybe like who I just mentioned, Gallinari, one that's going to get in there where you're like, oh, good for you, you know, one of those kinds of things. And then you look back in 5 years and you're like, how did he make an All-Star game, you know?
Yeah, it's like that. But these people are just like, you know, how to make the All-Star game. But it's going to be like back when, you know, Pierce and Walker used to make it. And they're like, well, why are we playing 5 minutes? Why are we here? What's the point of this? And that's just going to be. They're just going to be sitting there, okay, you'll go in for 2 minutes, okay, you're back out. And there's no... You know, I just say it's overrated. I'm more of the fan of the skills competition, the dunk contest on Saturday night.
I'm a fan of the All-Star snub. That's why I like the reserve choosing process, because when one guy doesn't make it, they always go off for a big game. Curry did it when he got snubbed, and he scored 50 on the Knicks. I remember when Mo Williams got snubbed at first, and he scored 50 points or something like that in a game when he was with the Cavaliers in the first time around. So those are always fun because people do have a chip on their shoulder when they feel like they get disrespected in terms of their talents, you know?
Yeah, but that just goes to the irrational swagger of the NBA in general, where everybody thinks they should be making it. And
Now, is Popovich? I forget the process of selecting the coaches based on if the guy had the previous coach had already coached the year before. So I would assume it's going to be Popovich or maybe Steve Kerr. Or is it going to be Steve Kerr again?
It'll be Kerr. It's the isn't it the
the coach with the top record.
Yes, so it was going to be Luke Walton, but now that Kerr's back, it'll be Kerr.
Yeah, because he's on the interim tag, you can't do that. So, you know, a little bit of controversy there, I guess you could say. And then there's also controversy on the Eastern side because of recent breaking developments, and that's involving David Blatt. David Blatt was the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, who have the best record so far in the Eastern Conference, sitting at, let me take a look here, 30-12. Not too shabby, huh? And they're at least, even though they just recently lost to the Bulls, they're still a good 2.5 games ahead of the Toronto Raptors. So they are clearly the best team in the East, record-wise and talent-wise. But after a really embarrassing loss on Martin Luther King Day on the TNT night game at home against the Golden State Warriors, which was their last game against the Warriors because they had already played and lost on Christmas Day. They had two. Here's the odd part about it. They had two wins right after that. They had blown out the horrible Brooklyn Nets, and then they beat the Clippers at home on TNT again, and then they fired David Blatt. So Blatt would be considered the all-star coach, and Tyronn Lue, the new head coach, who was the assistant under him, even vouched for him to be the guy that is the all-star coach if it came down to it. But, you know, we can look at it both ways with the all-star game side of things or the Cleveland Cavaliers side of things. But first of all, we'll just settle the all-star thing. Do you think he should be the head coach of the Eastern Conference?
Of the All-Star game, why not? It doesn't...
It's going to be so awkward with LeBron. So awkward.
It'd be awkward with LeBron, but it's going to be awkward, period, with whoever it is. Because now, you know, this is a complete Phoenix-level train wreck that Cleveland has now put themselves into.
I can't go that far because Phoenix is losing games. I don't think that Cleveland's going to be in a situation where they're going to be losing games because they're just too good of a team.
It's not about winning and losing. It's just you have decided to make changes the most inopportune time. For really, they haven't. You know, this happened quite recently, but there still hasn't been one real good reason. And then, you have LeBron. Well, nobody told me. And the GM, oh, I'm totally in charge. Why aren't you listening to me? Why do I have to go on and have the press conference and defending everything?
With David Griffin, the GM of the Cavs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
He must have said at least three times in that press conference, it was my decision.
Yeah, you seem to be saying that a little bit too much right now.
Especially when we know the person who's always involved in decisions. Yeah, and that would be LeBron James. Now, let's be honest. Give me a percentage of the responsibility. I'm trying to find the right word. Give me how much of a percentage of LeBron's input was involved in David Blatt's firing. Give me a percentile.
You could say 100 and zero at the same time.
Okay.
If the GM is in charge, but you have your, let's just say your daughter comes to you and goes, Daddy, I don't like this anymore. I don't like this type of juice box. Okay. The first thing you're going to do is be like, okay, I'm going to throw them all out right now. She didn't do anything. She's not in charge of the refrigerator. But you went in like, okay, I'm removing all of these. We're getting rid of Cool Berry and we're bringing in Frosty Berry.
Okay.
I don't know, whatever. But you could say, if he's not in charge, then really this team, the GM, he might just be rivaling Billy
King.
You're
the one that didn't shop for the juice box. You know,
well, you don't want to shout the truth, but you're the one who assembled the fridge, and you look at this team, and the problem with the team is you have Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love, Timofey Mozgov, and none of them can play together. The league is getting smaller and faster, and you're playing LeBron at the four in crunch time, so you have just built this really horrible roster with zero backcourt depth.
What kind of flavor juice box is this right now?
Right now, it's just Stinkberry.
You know what I did for Christmas? My wife bought it as a gag for the family. They have Jelly Belly. They have like have you seen this before where they have the dueling flavors but they look the same?
No.
And it's a contest where, and then one of them is really bad. It's black licorice or stinky skunk.
Oh.
And man, the skunk was so bad. I ate it. Like I wasn't one of those ones that was going to spit it out like a pussy. I was going to eat it. You know, so I was like, okay, it really tastes terrible, but yeah, maybe I wouldn't call this stinky skunks. I would call this more like rotten egg Jelly Belly, which is like, it's either rotten egg or buttered popcorn. But to be honest, the rotten egg one didn't taste the worst, but it had a weird taste to it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just, you know, well, good enough isn't, you know, good enough for us. And you know, Tyronn Lue, his first press conference, you know, after their loss to Chicago, which is funny because now we're all overreacting like we did last year when they lost their first game to Chicago.
Now, you're familiar with Tyronn Lue. He came from, you know, he came from the Doc Rivers coaching tree in Boston, which also had Tom Thibodeau. And he was sort of the guy that kind of moved up as the top assistant for Rivers after Thibodeau left Boston. And he also followed Rivers to the Clippers. And he was like a top candidate for the Cavs job at first before Blatt was hired. Now, how much of this friction, and because there was definitely friction between David Blatt and LeBron James, mostly involving LeBron just not really respecting him as a coach. And Jeff Van Gundy had some really harsh words on the first Saturday night ABC game talking about how, you know, the players have to respect the coach. And I understand his point of view being a former coach. But how much of this friction involved the fact that Blatt was hired before LeBron got there?
Well, that's a lot of the problems. He was hired. He didn't really inherit. You know, he came in, okay, we have a young roster. Let's mold them. You're this veteran of Europe. You've won 700 games. You're a professional. We need a little more structure. And then in comes LeBron, and oh, I'm bringing all my friends in. Mm-hmm. And then it basically just became the, you know, the RA versus the students in the dorm where it's, you know, no loud music, lights off. And it doesn't, you know, they immediately didn't get off, you know, on the same foot together. And really, I think the question that I was asking out of this was, how useless was Spoelstra in Miami then? Because,
you know, I watched this on the Starters when they talked about this, and Trey Kirby made a great point, and I got to give him credit, and a lot of people have said this too. Spoelstra, it seemed like at first Spoelstra was on thin ice. You know, they kind of belly flopped, or at least LeBron did in the 2011 NBA Finals. A lot of people thought Spoelstra was in trouble. They thought that Spoelstra was going to be gone if they got eliminated by the Celtics in 2012, and they got themselves out of that rut and wound up winning the title. But here's the thing about LeBron and Spoelstra that he made a good point about is that Spoelstra had the backing of Pat Riley. At the end of the day, and we still see this with the Miami Heat organization to this day, even though LeBron was at the time that he was there, the main influence in Miami, that was Pat Riley's organization. It was his. And, you know, maybe this speaks to a deeper cut. Maybe LeBron was just jealous that the Miami Heat was never going to be his organization, and he wanted to join a team, not necessarily because of hometown ties, but because he wanted to go to a team where he could run the show. It was his baby.
I wouldn't say that as so much of he became a different person. When, you're in your mid-20s, oh, I want to hang out with my friends. This was great. The Olympics was great. Wouldn't it be great if we did this every day? Oh, it was awesome. Then all of a sudden you're 30. It's like, well, now it's not the same anymore. Let me go do something different. Let me be the star again. Mm-hmm. Let me have everything. Because his attitude has changed.
I feel like in Cleveland he wants to have his cake and eat it too, to steal a phrase.
Yeah, but, again, he didn't have it, and then it's, I want Kevin Love on my team. I have to have Varejao back. I need, you have to sign Tristan Thompson.
You need to trade Andrew Wiggins, because he can't play in my spot.
As a team, it's just, that roster does not look good right now, and, mm-hmm. Yeah, you could beat the teams in the East, but you're always expected to beat the teams in the East. And who was really going to give you the challenge?
Now the
it's supposed to be Chicago.
Now numbers wise, you look at it, and David Blatt's firing doesn't make any sense. Okay, 83-40 as a coach there, excellent. Okay, and a lot of people complain that Blatt never really had like a signature style or like established a signature style with the Cavs. I can't really agree. I felt like that the style that Blatt had was that they could slow you down on defense when they wanted to, but they were also a very good three-point shooting team. Now, I'm not sure what they're going to be doing under Tyronn Lue. It feels like Tyronn Lue, with the quotes that he gave out, after the loss to the Bulls on Saturday on ABC, was that they want to play a little faster. And he even mentioned, along with LeBron, who's obviously going to be backing Tyronn Lue because he supports him a little bit more than Blatt, was that the team's not in good enough shape. Now, I mean, for a team not to be in good enough shape in the middle of the season is a little discouraging. But, I mean, I just think that's just kind of like air balloons that they're throwing out there for people to latch onto while they just work on whatever it is Tyronn Lue wants to
work
change.
On changing their system. But
yeah,
always,
what are they going to – here's what I'm trying to say. What are they trying to change? What are they going to be able to change?
Well, the thing is, coaches, every time there's a new coach, they always say they want to run more. I've never heard a coach say, what we need to do? We need to slow it down a bit.
Lionel Hollins did. That's the only one who ever said that.
But every new coach, we need to change. But you look at the roster, I've just been, ranting about, who is going to go faster? You're not going to get – you really want to speed up Kevin Love and Mozgov, and you're gonna speed up LeBron, who's, taking a day off here and there once in a while now.
Yeah.
And, all the stats, he's over his prime. His stats are going to, because he has so much mileage on him and he's 31. So, yeah, eventually it's going to go down. But that's, the default answer. But it's the wrong answer. It's, you have to figure out what your team is, which they don't even know right now, because it's just, it's LeBron. He's orchestrated this through whether he, explicitly.
Yeah.
Whether you explicitly say it or not, this is what you wanted. We know the only one that on the team that didn't had a problem with the coach was you. Mm-hmm. Everyone, I didn't hear Kevin Love going, oh man, this sucks. Kevin Love seemed to have a problem with LeBron.
Kevin Love had a problem with the playing time, with the PT before, in the first year. But it seemed like to be working out with Irving's injury. I mean, Love was having terrific stretches. I don't think it's a coincidence that Kyrie Irving's back taking most of the minutes and now Kevin Love's unhappy again. I don't think it's a coincidence.
Exactly. Then Kevin Love, you know, his defense is a liability, so now we can't play him in stretch time because he's not going to guard anybody. And
did the Warriors games and the one Spurs game, did that expose Love and Irving as, you know, defensive, like Achilles heels, or is that something that they can work on together?
No, you can't work on it together. All you can do is create a team defense to sort of hide it, but that's now really starting from scratch because he is who he is at this point.
And you have a head coach with no head coaching experience. This isn't like when Mike Woodson was behind Mike D'Antoni in New York, and when they fired Mike D'Antoni, they already had a guy ready. You know, Tyronn Lue was a guy that they had considered, or LeBron, I guess, had considered, which means the team did, like a future head coach, but he had no head coaching experience.
It was, you know, obviously Blatt wasn't a good fit, and you could probably say this was going to happen at the end of the season if they didn't win the title, and now that they got blown out by the Warriors, it was, okay, now we're definitely not going to win now. It's panic time. Let's just get the Lou replacement in a little earlier than we had expected. But this was a move that was going to happen probably next year once LeBron resigned.
And that's the last part of this that we want to talk about, because you and I had talked about this during the playoffs when he almost had that meltdown where Lou had prevented him from calling a timeout that would have been catastrophic for the Cavs when they had played in the playoffs in, I think it was game four against the Bulls. Did Blatt's dismissal come a little bit later than expected?
In the terms of in the season or just in general, or should he have been fired last year?
In general, do you think he should have been fired earlier if LeBron had wished so? Do you think LeBron should have probably communicated to David Griffin that earlier than that, with a little more mustard, like, I don't want him as the coach?
Well, it was probably, I don't like him, but I'm going to give it a second chance now.
Okay.
And then it's just, you know, probably constant bitching every day. You know, hey, LeBron has to go, oh, man, it's horrible. It's horrible still. Oh, man. And then it's just like, okay, I can see what you're getting after.
This isn't the same as the Rockets situation. Now, I think Dwight Howard and James Harden, I don't think James Harden's a coach killer, even though I think Harden's influence had a lot to do with Kevin McHale's firing. I think Dwight Howard's a coach killer. But the whole team seemed to give up on Kevin McHale. I didn't feel like the team gave up on David Blatt.
Well, that's they didn't. That's the thing, is they were still playing hard for him. Yeah. And then the last game, right before he got fired, they're like, oh, we did some good things, and the coach made some good, you know, changes, and they all seemed, so that's why you could say, yeah, they were shocked by the timing of it, but mm-hmm. no, I'm in charge, don't worry, this is all my decision. Then why are you making the decision now? Was Brooklyn going to go sign Tyronn Lue right now? I didn't think you could sign somebody from another team in midseason, but you know, why was the rush to get it done now?
I'm not sure. It's a little bit befuddling, but it does seem like something that LeBron really wanted to do. He had it in his mind. And David Griffin can, you know, take the bullet, and that's what executives do. You know, you're supposed to be the guy that takes the brunt of the media criticism to try to deflect it away from your superstar players. And I totally, totally understand his point of view. You know, you don't want LeBron to get like Cleveland fans are still a little bit on the cloud nine of LeBron coming back anyway, so they don't want to anger him. And he is on a year, like a 1 year contract, even though it's very likely that he'll leave. What are the chances after this season that Blatt coaches another NBA team as a head coach?
100 or zero.
Again.
to keep with, you know,
I think he will definitely be a head coach.
If he wants to stay in the NBA, it's 100%. If he said, you know what, screw you guys, I'm going back to Europe, he will.
I mean, look at Chip Kelly. I mean, the guy gets fired, and then, you know, he keeps himself. He was vouching for himself with NFL teams. He didn't want to go back to college. You know, I think the grass is just greener on this side, where when people get in there, even if they get clowned and they lose their job, they still want to stay in the system, even if it means you become a retread.
He wasn't really in the system before, and you can just be like, you know what, it's not worth the media attention and the media hassle, and I don't need to play, you know, there's not many egos in Europe as there are here. So it's like, you know what, I could just have a nice, simpler life.
No, but there's more work involved. You know, and I don't want to try to make it like coaches don't want to do more work because they're tough, tenacious people by nature. But maybe they just want to kind of kick back a little bit, you know. And if they can get a job making, you know, over $1 million a year being a head coach in the NBA, great. You know,
The problem with Chip Kelly, the coach, was good. I don't think anybody's really taken away from that. Chip Kelly, the GM, was god-awful.
I mean, I'm not the biggest NFL expert, you know, maybe not, you know, as close to you. Maybe we could use this to kind of vent about the Saints a little bit. But I think Chip Kelly had great ideas. Like, I think I think he has the kind of concept that, you know, like the Patriots do, and, you know, like sometimes like the Seattle Seahawks do. If you take little bits and pieces from it and make it work and use it, it can work. But don't make it your entire offense. And that's,
yeah, but
that's,
and then you get the players in you think you want, and they're all awful.
Yeah.
If he just said, you know, these are the players I'm given, I'm going to work with it, that's great. LeBron James, you know, top five player all time. LeBron James, the GM, not very good.
Is he worse than Michael Jordan, owner/GM?
He is on his way with his questionable decisioning.
I mean, that's where Larry Bird really set himself apart. I mean, remember, Magic Johnson at one time was an interim coach, and he sucked. You remember that one little stretch in 94 when he coached the Lakers, and he got ejected from a game for, like, I think he threw something.
Yeah, but then, you know, that was just, well, you played, you surely can manage it, right? And then it's just, well, there's a little more intricacy, and that's why you don't see too many superstars who are NBA coaches.
Mm-hmm.
You see a lot of just role players and people who've been around like 5-10 teams, like Tyronn Lue. Doc Rivers had been on a half dozen teams. Jacques Vaughn wasn't, you know, anything special in the NBA. Well, wasn't special anything as a coach either.
It's the same reason we'll never see a player coach in the NBA, because the collective bargaining agreement bans it. Like, if Derek Fisher could have found a way to stay as a player, you know, to be, you know, part of the Players Association and be the player coach with the New York Knicks, he probably would have tried to do it, you know, but the rules ban it. So he had to retire, you know, abruptly from the Thunder, and then he took the job with the Knicks. Same thing with Jason Kidd.
Yep, and then, you know, Jason Kidd, well, the jury's out on him already, from him being that wunderkind,
Now LeBron James isn't retiring anytime soon. Like, if LeBron James is given the option, well, you can coach a team, but you have to retire. Well, of course he's not going to retire. You know, so there's only so much input that you can put in because you're still just the player. You know, you're the greatest player in the world. That's fine, but you're a player.
Yeah, he's not coaching. He's not going into the GM. Mm-hmm. He's going to be on TNT or ESPN. He's going to keep his face.
Now, we're talking a lot about the Cleveland Cavaliers because we've seen a whole hell of a lot of them. You know, they were on the Martin Luther King Day primetime game with the Warriors where they got blasted. I think the final score was like 132-98.
I mean, it was just ugly all around.
It was like Memorial Day massacre, Celtics-Lakers bad. It was like, I would consider that an important regular season game. That's one that really had repercussions. You know, those are the kinds of games that you remember. And then right after that, they had the Thursday night game against the Clippers where they won. Turned out to be Blatt's last game coaching the Cavs. And then the Saturday night game on ABC. Let's talk about that for just a second. Did you even know that they had that new Saturday night schedule on ABC with the new contract?
No, you informed me about, like, what are we talking about from, like, the 70s or 80s or something? Like, no, it's back. It's on. I'm like, why? I mean, you know, why not? But,
yeah,
you know, it's done because there's nothing on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's college basketball, but college basketball doesn't gain the kind of ratings. And, you know, college football playoff is over. There's only three games left. Well, you could talk about the Pro Bowl, but who fucking cares about the Pro Bowl? There's three games left for the NFL. There's the two conference championship games, which will be, you know, which were on Sunday. And congratulations to whoever those teams are that make Super Bowl L. Or Super, I guess you can call it Super Bowl 50 is fine, but I still go by the Roman numeral Super Bowl L. you know, obviously we taped this, so we'll go behind. We're gonna open the curtain a little bit. Who you see in the Super Bowl?
It'll be the Patriots and the Panthers in a battle of who cares.
I agree.
it's already not because this.
No, I agree that I don't care. I don't agree about the teams.
Like, I have just basically retired from football between all the scandals and all the whole just pure scumbaggery with the whole L.A. thing. Mm-hmm. It's just like, well, you don't care about anything. And then, you know, the lawsuits, they're in Santa Clara, they're kicking out youth soccer leagues so they can have a fan pavilion. It's just
Let's talk about the NBA side of the Kroenke thing, because this is interesting. And wrestling fans will know this because there's a connection. Do you remember when Stan Kroenke kicked the WWE out of the Pepsi Center because he had given them a lease for an advanced date for Raw, but the Nuggets made the Western Conference Finals, so they had to adjust the schedule. So they told WWE they couldn't perform on Raw that night because they had a playoff game between the Nuggets and the Lakers.
Yeah.
Guess who Vince went to. To get their to host their Raw show, because you know how vindictive and personally offended Vince gets by these business dealings. He went to the Staples Center in L.A., and then they had a main event. I'm not even kidding. They had like a 10-man main event where the five good guys had Laker jerseys and the five bad guys had Nuggets jerseys.
Oh yeah, it was.
And look, it's you know, it's fiction and reality all mixed together again. Kroenke going to L.A. You know, and jolting the Rams, even though he owns the Nuggets, he still owns the Nuggets. If I stand corrected, right?
I don't. You could be correct. I don't know, but
yeah,
it's just. And then you know, oh, this was what I always wanted. This is great. And then you just there's no good. The only good press that came out of this is, well, okay, now it's thinly veiled to say, well, this is for the Olympic bid in 20. Okay, now we have our Olympic. You know, arenas out in L.A. But other than that, it's just a bunch of just...
Well, look, it's been so long. They pulled those blackout rules. We know why they did that, because they know they're not going to be able to sell out more than 75% of the stadiums that the Rams and whoever it's going to be, the Chargers, the Raiders, probably the Chargers, are going to be inhabiting for, you know, while they wait for this new stadium that builds in... I think the one that got accepted was Inglewood, right? The one in Inglewood?
Yeah. Everybody said is the wrong one.
And then they have one in Carson, California. I didn't even know there was a city in California called Carson, but Carson with a C, like Carson Palmer, like the guy that might go to the Super Bowl, which boggles my fucking mind.
Well, he's not. He's good. He just had, you know, ever since his first ACL injury, he was never the same. But
he looked jittery in that Packers game. We'll see about the. We'll see with the. With the one that the one that's going to be going on as we go in, but no, I'll say Broncos, Panthers, and both quarterbacks stink it up in the Super Bowl.
It's just, you know, who everybody's all injured. There's tons of people in reserve. It's there's nothing exciting about. You're going to create a storyline. Oh, it's Cam Newton versus Peyton Manning or Tom Brady again, and. NFL is still suing him and re-upping on the deflate gate. I've had enough of it.
Yeah, but the Super Bowl and the NFL will be out of there. The one major broadcast network that does not have a Super Bowl slot or you know in the Super Bowl rotation is ABC. So they're obviously reaching here. They want we need more content. We've got this ESPN contract with the NBA that we paid. Almost twofold more money for, you know, and it shows with the new money that's coming into the salary cap, which is influenced directly by the television revenue. And so you're paying more money. And we saw this with the NFL with the playoffs, with the way they rotated the playoff game so that everybody gets more coverage. So you pay more money for your broadcast rights. Well, of course, you're going to want to expand the schedule. So what they did is they took more games and they put them on a primetime schedule. The first one was the Bulls and the Cavaliers. That was just this past Saturday. The Bulls won and Tyronn Lue's first game coaching the team. Let me give you the next games, okay? On the 30th of January, the Spurs also go to Cleveland and play the Cavaliers. Then 2 weeks, they don't want to compete with the Super Bowl. So the night before the Super Bowl, February 6th, no game. The 13th of February is the All-Star break. No game. That's All-Star Saturday. 20th of February, Warriors-Clippers. 27th of February, Warriors-Thunder. March 5th, Rockets-Bulls, which shows that this was not flexed. That means that they had already preordained these games before, you know, before the schedule was even announced.
four-team pack. It's like the Warriors have three games, the Bulls have three games, the Cavaliers have three games. There's no variety in this package whatsoever. It's just said, well, we want these three.
Yeah, because after that, Thunder Spurs on March 12th, Warriors Spurs on March 19th. We'll talk about that in a second. And then a two-week break, and then on April the 9th, the last one, the Cavs play the Bulls, but this time it's in Chicago.
Yeah, it's just the same teams over and over. And, you know, why do they put it on a Saturday? What airs on Saturday? All they've been putting on Saturday primetime has been usually reruns of the week's most popular show.
Or World's Strongest Man or some very – have you ever seen the ESPN coverage during the NFL postseason games?
Oh, it's
it is laughable. It
1980s.
It is like reruns of really bad poker and CrossFit contests. Like,
well,
it's,
you need to try to find something that somebody will watch that's not going to.
Or the Harlem, like, I mean, and I love the Harlem Globetrotters, but to put their like 50-year anniversary or 70-year anniversary game, you know, up against like an NFL playoff game, that it's almost spiteful. You know, I'm sure they're happy to be on national television, but look what you're up against, you know?
Well, you're just trying to find, you know, like, what, you know, when the Super Bowl's coming up, just go on your, you know, your little DVR guide and just scroll to see the different channels. You're going to see, like, a lot of, like, chick flicks and a lot of just programming that's not...
It's not premier original programming.
Yeah, you're going to try to find the few people who aren't going to watch football. It's like... Everybody's bitching about Coldplay it's Coldplay this year, right?
Yes.
They're bitching about them, but the only reason they did it is because they want to get a few extra women to watch who might not watch the Super Bowl. You could have just a guy farting into a bag for 40 minutes at halftime, and you're still going to watch it. So you trying to get people who might not, that's the whole point of it. People are angry, not understand, like, well, who are you going to put? Oh, we want Metallica every year. Well, you're still going to watch it if it's not Metallica. So, we, you know, that's why MTV had it. Well, why are you showing Britney Spears and NSYNC? Well, because that's because they want to get kids, and you get an extra million more people.
And have you watched MTV now? It's kids again. I mean, and a lot of it isn't even music. It's just shows, and it's all patterned for high school kids because that's your audience for the next 15 to 20 years, because if you latch on to them and they stick with you, then you can hold on to those guys in the Viacom network of, you know, programming that has E and has BH1 and all these other different type of categories that latch onto my, you know, my in her 30s wife. You know, that's who they catch on to.
Yeah, so, you know, with the NBA thing, it makes sense. Well, why not put something on? Because we might get 2 million, 3 million people as opposed to getting 200,000 people.
Well, clearly based on your tone of it, that the mystique of the weekend afternoon or the weekend evening broadcast network NBA game of the week is kind of lost. And I understand that because of the fact that it's been so oversaturated with the fact that there's so much more availability with cable and then internet streaming of being able to watch anything in the NBA TV the NBA TV slate of games, which, oh, by the way, they're the first network that's going to get the Warriors-Spurs palette. You know, they delayed all of their games up to January the 20th. I think it's the 25th or the 28th. And the first one is going to be on NBA TV, not on ESPN or not on TNT. So good for NBA TV. That might be their highest rated non-playoff game of all time. But anyways... You had the NBC schedule, and I love the NBC Sunday afternoon games. I used to get pumped watching those games. And then CBS before that, and then ABC way back in the, like, in the 60s. When did you sort of lose touch with, like, the weekend slate of games where it was like, ooh, the Lakers are playing this team on NBC. I've got to see this.
Well, the Sunday games just lost quality because nobody – the players aren't, I want to say, as up for a 1 p.m. Sunday afternoon game as they are for the usual night games. But,
yeah,
they
but
just,
if you're on national television at the time when cable wasn't as premier, yeah, people would get up for that game.
Yeah, people get up for it, but nowadays it's just, you know, well, here's the ESPN game Tuesday. Well, then TNT has it Thursday, then back to ESPN Friday, and now
there's five straight games. There's five straight nights of games.
And
Wednesday ESPN, Thursday doubleheader on TNT, Friday doubleheader ESPN, Saturday night ESPN or ABC, and then in some cases there's back to back. There's a Sunday afternoon game on ABC, which is the part of it that doesn't make sense to me. It feels like you're splitting hairs there. You're taking away some of your viewership from the Sunday afternoon slate. That's just me.
Well, don't worry, because it's just the same six teams again. Which is why once you told me about this, I'm like, let me look at the schedule.
Look at the Sunday games here: Bulls, Clippers, Clippers Heat, Cavs, Thunder. Warriors, Lakers, Cavs, Clippers, and then Thunder Rockets is the last one. So
yeah, it's just the same six teams.
Just the Clippers and the Lakers.
And yeah, this is now the Sunday is now the B game to the Saturday A. But it's just the same. I don't want to see, as much as I love the Warriors, I don't need to see them five times every week. I don't need to see San Antonio or Cleveland ever, really. Mm-hmm. I have no desire to see them. It's just not. I watched it last night, and I'm like, watching Chicago. I know Chicago's terrible, and Chicago did look terrible, and Cleveland was even worse.
Yeah, Chicago didn't play great in that game. So I don't want to make too much out of a Saturday night game like, oh, this is the biggest game of the year. It wasn't. But the fact was, the Bulls didn't play great. Now, Derrick Rose has definitely played better. Have you noticed that? I think he's on a stretch where he's averaging like 20 points a game over the last 10 games.
Yeah, and everyone's like, oh, he's back to form. It's like, no.
No, he's not back to form.
He still looks a step slower. And
he does.
He'll never be the way he was. And
that is Jimmy Butler's team. Pau Gasol defensively has been very good. It seems like they're sort of coming, there's something coming into fruition. I'm trying to get the freaking phrase out.
But are they really? They still look terrible. No matter whose team it is, and, you know, Joakim Noah going out for the year definitely helped with malcontenters and B, the log jam. But in that team doesn't look happy. They don't look like – Hoiberg doesn't look like the answer.
Yeah. And then we got the other teams in the West, the ones that really we're talking about. The Clippers have dropped a couple of games. We talked about the Cavs loss. But they were on a 10-game winning streak at one point. They're playing very well, you know, with Blake Griffin still out. Chris Paul has been picking up steam. They're at 28-15 right now. The Thunder look really good. I don't know if it's because the reserves are playing a little bit better. I think it's mainly because Durant and Westbrook are together have become just an absolutely unstoppable duo. And then we got the Spurs and the Warriors. Give me a 1 to 10 scale of how much you're looking forward to this first matchup between the Warriors and the Spurs, which will be in Golden State.
Zero. This is just me and San Antonio, where I just don't, that team, I could just put me to sleep.
Well, it will put you to sleep because it's at 10:30 at night.
I'll be up.
Doing what?
I'll be up and I'll probably watch it because there's nothing else for me to do. But you know, it's just
the funny part, we just talked about ABC game of the week and the old school. This is the game of the week, and it's on
Monday night. Yeah, it's the game of the week. It's buried at 10:30. And is it going to be a good game? Do I expect San Antonio to win? Yeah, of course I do. But it's the regular season. Who cares? This is game one of the regular season because. Oh, we need to hold it back for TV ratings. Yeah, so what? How is this this is the only time they're playing? Is this the championship? No, this will be the championship game, whether it be game one or game three. We'll see more of this. So why should I get excited for round one of a 10-round boxing match?
Now, the Spurs are giving up 89 points a game, which is pretty good anyways, but given the fact that the scoring average, and you and I talked about this in a different private conversation, I guess every conversation is private, we talked about the fact that team average scoring is leaped this year to 101 points a game. Everybody is just scoring in bunches now. Everybody's going faster. And the Spurs are still able to slow teams down. Their defensive efficiency is like the best ever. It's like one of like the five or three best of all time. Do they have the perfect recipe to stop the Golden State Warriors?
No, not really. There's no perfect recipe. The only perfect recipe to stop the Warriors is just let the Warriors do what they do. You see on games when they're missing their threes, it's a lot more difficult for them to pull it out as opposed to when they hit 50%.
The irony is that I thought the Cavs under David Blatt had a very nice Like, it was almost by accident because of Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving's injury. But I felt like the way that they did it, that David Blatt would execute the defensive game plan where they would play a lot of bigs and try to slow them down and make them, and make them play a big guy. I thought that was the perfect way to slow down Golden State and make them take less threes, which would give them a lower percentage.
Yes, that is the way, and that's the way to beat him is just not to play into the Warriors' game, not to try to become them, which, as we saw on Christmas, the Cavaliers try to become the Warriors and just shoot 43.
So you're saying let the Warriors be the Warriors, but let you be you. Don't try to speed it up if you can't speed it up.
Exactly, which is, you know, it's the old Memphis Grizzlies, which, you know, they're back up on the sort of a winning again.
Yeah, they've won about four or five in a row. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're it's just the, okay, you're going to shoot, all right, you're going to keep shooting. We're going to do what we do. Yeah. It's not, well, okay, we need to change what we've become in order to match up with this. No. If it's a mismatch for you, it'll be a mismatch for them on the other side. So, well, they run small. Yeah, well, we're just going to, okay, let's just dump it to our two big men the entire game.
I'm really, because there's been so much talk about it with some of the shows about what the Spurs are, because they haven't played yet, what the Spurs are going to try to do defensively with Curry. You know, he's still the league-leading scorer at 30 points a game now. He's going to have he's on the pace of a 50-40-90 season, which is, you know, for the people who don't really know, 50% from the field, 40% from three, 90% or better from the free throw line. So there's been so much talk of, okay, what's Pop going to do defensively on Curry? What do you think he should do? Do you think he should try to chase him around with Tony Parker, who can defensively be a liability sometimes? Do you put a bigger body like Danny Green, or you just put him on, Brent Berry said this, the Kawhi and Islands, put Kawhi Leonard on him?
You just do what you've always been doing. This is not the first time these teams have met ever, and the coaches have met.
No, and the one game where I saw Curry struggle, Kawhi was on him almost the entire game.
Yeah, so you do that, then you'll rest them up and then put Green on them for a bit, and then you sort of run some tough zone, and you let Klay Thompson sort of go off on you. And
well, I think the key to is Draymond Green versus an older, slower, still wise Tim Duncan. That's going to be key.
Yeah, it's older and slower, but then what's going to happen? You have Aldridge against
Bogut, maybe?
Bogut, and then once Bogut gets try two
Azili.
Quick fouls. Yeah, it's going to be, well, now you have, okay, we'll just give it to Aldridge and let him just pick and roll with Aldridge all day.
Yeah. Do you think that's been a really nice combination that sort of melded together, even though his points per game hasn't been too great and people expected that because of the Spurs system? Do you think Aldridge, Duncan, Kawhi has kind of turned into a really nice front court there? They've obviously, I mean, they're 38-6 for Christ's sakes. You know, everything's going well over there. But do you have any kind of, like, issues there with the way they play?
No, there are no issues. Like, you watch the beginning of the season, oh, they look clunky. Well, yeah, because you need to learn how this new piece fits in, and his numbers are down. You don't hear him complaining, I'm not getting my touches, I'm not getting anything.
Yeah, it's the opposite of Cleveland. Yeah.
just the system-orientedness of San Antonio is like, look, you'll get your plays, you'll get your shots. It's nothing to really worry about.
Now let me say this. Cleveland hung in there with the Spurs in San Antonio on TNT like a week or two ago. So it's not like the Cleveland is so – they keep saying, well, man, they are so – like they're so well behind the Warriors in the Spurs. I just think the Warriors are just a bad matchup for Cleveland when Cleveland tries to play fast. You know, if they slow things down like they did against the Spurs, I think the Cavs are a very successful team. That's why I think Tyronn Lue saying that he wants to speed things up is the wrong way to go. But if that's what LeBron wants, then that's what LeBron gets, you know?
Yeah, and then once LeBron has to sit out two games because of rest and...
Yeah, knees, a little bit of knee problems, yeah.
Yeah, then, oh, well, good luck with that. So, I don't want to go back to the, like I said, just sort of a mess they've created for themselves now. But... Yes, they create a matchup problem, but they don't have to worry about it till June. And who's to say that they're going to stand pat? Who's to say, you know, there won't be an injury on any of these teams, or they don't wear each other out in the Western Conference Finals? Or it's way too far away to predict any of this, other than it's pretty safe to say Cleveland will be the Eastern Conference representative, because who
else
is... I
would assume so, too, yeah.
Who is really... Oh, Toronto's second place, but...
And then there's the Bulls behind them, who's surging a little bit. And then after that, you know, it's a little bit mixed up. You know, you got the Magic here, you got the Celtics there. The Wizards are playing a little bit better. The Hawks are still a winning team. The Heat are right there too. It's a little bit mixed up with the East, but they're definitely good teams in the East. Like last year, the teams in the East after the top four were just bad. You know, this year they're not. I think the Wizards are a good team, but they're not. I don't even know if they're in the eighth slot right now because of the fact that there's just a lot of teams with winning records right now.
Nope, the Wizards are in ninth. They're just below 500, and you know, right now every week is going to change. But right now, the bottom four: Indiana, Detroit, Boston, and Miami.
Yeah, Indiana's slipping a little. You know, they got to pick it up. I just saw them lose a game where against the Kings in Sacramento, where DeMarcus Cousins got a career high, I believe it was 48 points. So, I mean, I don't know what's going on there within Indiana. Maybe they just lost touch with their defensive mindset.
Small ball can only work for so long until you come up to a beast like that. If you know, the center position was really dead, you wouldn't have teams.
They're so desperate inside. I watched them play the Warriors, and they had to throw in Miles Turner. You know, Turner had to come in there and he played really well. Good for him. But when you have to depend on a rookie big man like that to give you important minutes, I mean, you're in trouble, you know?
Yeah, so, you know, enough of this. The center's dead, and everybody's going to run power forwards and really tweener power forwards at that. No, it's not going to happen if you, you know, San Antonio still is getting 7'2" European guys.
Boban.
Denver is building, it seems to be an army of 6'10" guys.
Nikola Jokic is still, like, every now and then I watch a highlight. There's Nikola Jokic getting a nice little dump-off dunk, you know? He can play.
Jokic, Nurkic, and then Jeffrey LaVerne, I think, is 7'. Kenneth Faried is 6'9",
Gobert just came back from his injury. We'll see how Utah bounces back from that, because they struggled a little bit. Because also, I think Derek Favors had sat a game or two because of an injury as well. So,
well, they struggled because they had Trevor Booker getting tons of minutes, and a stretch four isn't going to rebound. So that's the problem is... Well, the NBA is going small. Everyone wants to shoot threes. Well, then who's going to rebound them if you're
like, ideally, a guy I've seen in college, his name is Henry Ellenson in Marquette. That's like your ideal guy because he's a good rebounder. He's really tall and he can shoot the threes too. So what you really need is a guy that can rebound first and then you can kind of work with the rest of the offensive game from there. Don't just look for a scorer. I think that's where people make the mistake.
You were really high on Ellenson. I think a lot of people are selling on him except for you.
I like Ellenson. I think he's got the rebounding credentials, the ability to do it, and he's also got a really nice form on his shot. I think he's pretty good. He does have a little bit of work to do. I think he's got to build up a little bit more muscle, but he's a big. He's country strong. You know, he's a pretty good player. I got to give him some credit. He's definitely a lottery player. You know, but we'll talk about college another day. Give me some hope for my Pelicans. They've won three in a row with their 10-game homestand. Give me some hope.
I don't even have hope. I can't lie to you.
They could make the eighth spot.
I can't lie to you. I was thinking of doing a solo episode last week until I got really, really sick. And I was like, okay, I can't even stay up for 15 minutes, let alone try to do a half hour by myself. But that roster is just awful. The only hope you have is trading Ryan Anderson away and getting some better parts.
Chances Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon get traded, either or.
Oh, Anderson should be gone. If they keep him, then your team is just doomed.
There's a rumor that there might be a deal in place with Rudy Gay, which would probably involve Anderson because Anderson's from the Sacramento area. And they need a shooter.
There was a rumor with Rudy Gay. They're rumored to get Marquis Morris. And
Marquis Morris will absolutely be gone from Phoenix. We just don't.
Oh, he'll be gone. But that was like a three-team trade with him and Ryan Anderson. I forget who the third team was, but yeah. No, he should be gone. He's the only asset that team really has.
Yeah.
Because Tyreke Evans, again, for you, Gordon's gone. Drew Holiday isn't. he's not going to give you anything ever anymore.
Yeah, but we got some interesting games. Like, the homestand continues with the Pelicans, where they host the Rockets on Monday. The Cavaliers at home on Monday, they get the Timberwolves. And then we talked, obviously, about the Spurs and the Warriors to finish off the night. That's going to be one of the biggest games of the season so far. The Clippers go to Indiana to play the Pacers. This will be on Tuesday, okay? And then just not a really whole lot else. You know, moving on to the 27th, you've got the horrible Suns. Then they go to Cleveland. The Clippers go to Atlanta to play the Rockets. The Mavericks go to the Golden State to play the Warriors. The Mavericks are one of the only teams that have beaten the Warriors. The Rockets on ESPN play the Spurs. The Rockets are one of the only teams with Dwight Howard and James Harden that give the Spurs trouble. I can't put my finger on why, but they just do.
Well, every team has that one team that always gives them trouble.
And for the Spurs, it's the Rockets. I just don't know what it is. I think it's the Dwight factor. I think.
Well, since Dwight's out, then.
Yeah, but did you see that game he had on Martin Luther King Day? 36 points and 26 rebounds. It shows he can do it when he wants to.
He just doesn't want to when you have Harden, who's in his own world and doesn't care. It's not a, you know, they got Josh Smith, so maybe that'll resurrect.
Yeah, a very sneaky trade where they just kind of dumped him right back to the Rockets. It was almost like they rented him, and then the rent ran out.
Here you go,
you can have him back.
We'd rather get somebody. We'd rather get somebody else at the deadline.
The 28th, you've got the Hawks and the Pacers. On the 29th, a little bit of a more loaded day. You've got the Lakers and the Clippers again. Jesus. The Cavaliers go to Detroit to play the Pistons. The Pistons have given the Cavs a little bit of trouble too. And then on the 30th, you've got the Warriors go to Philly to play the Sixers. How have the Sixers only won games because of Ish Smith being there? Has having an NBA point guard been that much of a difference?
I think so, because it gives you that, and you get, you know, they get Okafor, or no, Elton Brand they got. It's like some old Duke player. It's a culture, and now we're not tanking, and nobody cares. Now we're going to try now, because you should try. And
yeah, but Colangelo there now, yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to Brown's like, well, who cares? Just go dunk and have fun, and you know, let's get a rotation. Let's get things going. Let's get a culture of winning.
It's still hopeless, but just kind of hopeless.
It's hopeless, but it's just, you're winning because now you're getting to the point of the season where teams are like, oh, we don't care if we lose this game.
The night game on the 30th for the Saturday we talked about is going to be the Spurs going to Cleveland. So Cleveland gets two primetime games in a row on Saturday nights. And then on the Sunday, you got the Hawks and the Heat. You've got the Warriors going to New York in the Garden to play the Knicks. And then you got the Bulls and the Clippers on ABC and Staples. So, you know, a couple of interesting games. I think this is the time of the season, Adam, where things start to pick up a little bit in terms of, like, urgency, especially with the trade deadline coming up and the All-Star break coming up, and people kind of know that things are getting nitty-gritty. And the David Blatt thing, guy, I mean, the shit's hit the wall with the Cavaliers. Now things have got to get going. You know, it's almost like their version of when they did the J.R. Smith Iman Shumpert trade, where it's like, okay, now we got to pick up steam.
Yeah, and you know, good luck with that. We'll see you on fucking ESPN and TNT every night. So
you're so mad about this with the Cavs. I mean, it's not like they're a bad team. Like, watching the Lakers on ESPN and TNT constantly makes my head hurt. Okay.
Yeah, but I know it's, yes, they're a good team, but I'm a fan of basketball, not the Cavaliers. I like variety. I like seeing different teams all the time.
Yeah, but it's not like you're going to see the Sixers play the Nets.
Well, no, but nobody's going to see that. But
well, you wanted variety, you got it.
There are 16 teams that make the playoffs, not six.
Yeah.
Let's show some of these other guys who are good.
But that's going to be wrapping up this episode, not the season, but this is going to be wrapping everything up for this regular season recap. I know we talked about how we had a break, so, apologies there, but we're going to be back in the show and everything. And you got anything else while I'm stumbling on my words here?
See you next week, hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah, I think we'll definitely be back next week. So on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see y'all again.